Hello? Hello? We need some help here, Carlisle.
Please calm yourself, Stanley. What's the problem?
They've gone mad. It's absolute chaos.
Who? The miners?
The miners, the guards, the employees, everyone.
Why? What's happening?
The diamonds, Carlisle. The diamonds are everywhere.
What? It's a diamond mine, Stanley. Get a hold of yourself.
No, there are diamonds everywhere. They're pouring out of the bloody earth. They're practically killing each other for them. They're taking them and running off where the shirt fall.
Put a stop to it. That's company property.
There's no stopping them, Carlisle. It's chaos. Call for the military. Call. Oh, God. Please, Carlisle, bloody send somebody!
I apologize for the strong content. Stanley Winthrop was one of many casualties of the Diamond War. This call was leaked during the subsequent investigation at the Sparkling Earth Diamond Mine. Stanley Winthrop was the operation manager, and he was speaking to the company overseer, Carlisle Habersham, in the early hours after the reported green light in the sky and the powerful earthquake that followed in the Democratic Republic of Congo. When all of the workers, upper management, the guards, the machine operators, the miners, entered the facility that morning, they found that their nearly depleted miles of tunnels were sparkling. The light from the lamps reflected off the faces of millions and millions of new diamonds that lined every wall. A new miracle had been performed. Hello, I'm Barry Orson, and welcome to the Gaia Miracles. The Democratic Republic of Congo, or the DRC, is one of the richest countries in natural resources, from lumber to raw minerals to metals and precious stones to exotic wildlife. It is also one of the poorest economies in the world. Most of the country is underdeveloped. The people struggle for basic necessities like food and water. There are very few paved roads, little to no access to hospitals or any kind of public aid. It is mostly military-run, but no one is ever sure which military group is in charge. I can't get into the political landscape of the DRC without dedicating 12 episodes to it. Google it. Foreign companies and governments own most of the large-scale mining facilities, which means that a very, very small percentage of the money made from these raw materials is funneled back into the country and its people. Here is Marquise Demont, a villager of the Demille village a few miles from the now decommissioned Sparkling Earth mining facility.
I have worked in the mine since I was 10. Mon père worked there for 26 years. It is not easy work, very dangerous. People get hurt, lose hands and legs and eyes. They get sick or crushed.
Marquise is very tall, 6'4", round bright eyes, smooth dark skin, and he has an incredibly bright smile, the ear-to-ear kind, and he's usually smiling.
Mon père worked the mines, my grandpa worked the mines, my brothers and sisters worked the mines. There's very little work anywhere else, unless you go to the city or join the military, but that's more dangerous.
From 10 years old, though? I mean, what do they have you doing down there when you're that small?
Everything. Digging, moving rocks, loading the machines, getting supplies.
And how old are you now?
I am 26.
Oh, you're still young.
I am young, but I am strong and smart.
So you work 16-ish years in the dangerous mine, hundreds of feet underground. I mean, were you not terrified?
Only at first, but you get used to it. You appreciate the sun more.
Did you ever find any diamonds before the miracle?
Only one time. The machines find the diamonds. We never get to see them. I was 13, maybe 14, and I had worked all day on clearing a new tunnel with the other kids.
And how many kids were in the mine with you?
Six. There weren't many children in our village. We picked up the dirt and the rocks, moved them into a pile in a sack, moved the sacks to the machines all day, no breaks. Very little water and some of my mama's breadfruit. But at least it was out of the heat, thank God.
The heat is no joke in the DRC. The equator cuts across the upper half of the country. It was 108 degrees Fahrenheit at high noon. Inside Marquis's home, in the shade, the temperature hovered at a cool 98.
One boy, Pavi, was carrying a heavy sack, and he falls over a rock and breaks his ankle. The guard comes and takes him up to the factory medical wing.
Which is one guy in an office with a stethoscope, a basic first aid kit, in the corner of the upper facility.
The god tells me to pick up the sack and he dropped and keep working. I scoop the dirt and rocks back in and I see it. One big shining diamond, big as this.
About the size of a nickel.
I am ashamed, but my first thought was, Papa, we're rich. I thought about all the things this diamond will buy for me and my family.
But you didn't get to keep it, huh?
No, I did not. I put it in the sack and go find my papa. I show him the diamond and he scolds me. He says, bury it deep in the sack and take it to the machines. I ask him, why? With this diamond, we can be the richest family in the village. He said these diamonds bring nothing but misery. They are cursed. Nothing good can come from something men will kill for. Then the god sees us talking. He calls out and comes over to us. I panic and I don't know why, but I hide the diamond in my mouth.
I probably would have done the same thing.
I still remember the taste, the cold dirt, the metal like blood.
And what happened next?
The god asks us, what do you have? I'm sure he saw it. I don't answer, just rolling the diamond on my tongue. My papa starts saying, sir, I am so sorry, my son. He tells me to give it to the god, but I don't. I wanted that diamond. My papa hits me on the back of the head and I swallow it.
You ate the diamond?
Yes. It was the most expensive meal I've ever had.
And did the guard find out?
Yes, my papa tried to explain, but the guard got so mad he took us to the big boss in the upstairs offices. The big boss accuses us of stealing and that we must give it back.
How?
One guard says, we'll cut it out, and he takes out his big knife.
What?
Yes, my papa falls to his knees and begs them not to.
I mean, would they really have done it? Cut you open for a small diamond?
To them, the diamond is worth more.
So what did you do?
My papa begs and begs. I'm crying all my tears, crying and crying. They come up with a new plan. They lock us in a room with a bucket and we wait.
For what?
For the diamond to pass.
Oh my God.
It's funny now, you know. Little me, sitting on a bucket, waiting. My papa praying to make a diamond out of shit. It took all day and all night, but the gods had a very clean diamond the next day.
Marquise's pooping diamond experience might have been unique, but the mistreatment was not. Workers were seen as expendable, easily replaced. Most of the population in the DRC worked for a mining facility. Other jobs were scarce, especially in villages far from the city centers. Marquise and his father worked at the Sparkling Earth facility until it was shut down shortly after the miracle. And how do you remember that day?
I couldn't sleep that night. I don't know why. I kept looking at the sky for rain. Then I see a light so bright and far away, and then the ground begins to vibrate.
The earthquake.
Yes and no. It wasn't an earthquake. The ground didn't shake hard. It vibrated slow and low at first, then faster and faster, and it got really hot. The dirt beneath my feet got hot as coal. I thought about a volcano, but there are no volcanoes here. So the vibration in the hot earth and then the one big shake like the ground jumped or some great big foot stomped the plains. Then it was all quiet.
How long did all of this take?
I don't know. It felt like the vibration went on forever, but maybe a minute or two? Then no light and no sound after the big shake. But the whole village woke up screaming. We thought the earth was trying to swallow us, but nothing else happened. We laughed and blamed Anansi and went back to bed. I slept very little. In the morning before sunrise, Mama makes us breakfast. We eat, say goodbye, and we walk to the mine. Inside the factory, we wait for the guards and the supervisors to be ready. We always go in and leave at the same time so they can watch us and make sure we're not stealing anything. They open the gates. We start marching in, going to our tunnels, but workers start whispering and pointing. The walls and the ground are sparkling and shining. There were diamonds everywhere, just sticking out of the dirt.
Yeah, I've seen some pictures of that. It looks like someone bedazzled the whole tunnel.
What is bedazzled?
Oh, it's a terrible word choice. It's when they glue plastic jewels on something to make it shiny.
I like that. Bedazzled.
Yeah, sorry. Go on.
The workers start to pick them out. As they realize what they are seeing, they go crazy, ripping diamonds out of the walls, cutting up their fingers, stuffing them into their pockets, carrying them in their shirts. The guards try to stop them. They hit them with their clubs, but some of them have started collecting diamonds too. It is chaos. They are fighting, they are digging, they are bleeding and screaming. They are running with their diamonds, but there's only one way to go. Most of the tunnels have collapsed and the facility had locked the gates.
You were all trapped inside?
Yes, the earthquake must have collapsed the tunnels. The gods outside don't know what to do. They can't let the workers run with the diamonds. Then I hear the gunshots.
Wait, they were armed?
Oh yes, and they do not fear using them. Stealing can earn you bullet. But this time it was the workers. They had taken the guns from some of the gods and started shooting. They used the picks to break the gates open. More shooting and fighting, but they're all running to get outside with pockets full of diamonds.
And what about you and your dad?
We did not join the chaos. I was trying to help Papa find a way out after the gates were open. We ran towards the entrance, but my Papa was hit with a shovel on the head. I had to drag him out. His head was bleeding for a long time.
Was he okay?
Yes and no. Do you want to say hi?
Sure. Marquise leads me through his family home, a four-room hut with a bedroom, a bathroom, and a large room that serves as a kitchen, living room, and Marquise's bedroom. Through a door by the kitchen is a garden. Flowers bloom in bright reds and yellows and oranges. Long grass sways in the steamy breeze. Birds sing in the tall branches of a lone tree. Marquise's father, Olinje, sits in a wooden chair in the shade, rocking quietly.
Papa, this is Barry the narrator.
Hello, it's nice to meet you.
I held out my hand to shake, but Olinje only stared at it. He very slowly turned his head to look at me, and then at Marquise, not recognizing either of us. Olinje suffered brain damage from the shovel blow on the day of the miracle. He has trouble speaking and remembering. His movements are slow. Marquise says his father remembers him most days and seems to be happiest in his rocking chair, listening to the birds. We sit outside with him and share a cup of tea in the cooling day. The area around the Sparkling Earth facility is situated in mostly flat plains. The light on the night of the miracles was reportedly seen as far as the western coast. The subsequent earthquake was felt about 800 miles around the center of the DRC. Seismologists reported what Marquise described, the rumbling signs of an earthquake before it starts to shake, but it was followed by one hard crunch of the earth. They called it a single anomalous seismic event. Nothing like it has ever been recorded. Here is Henry Brown, a seismologist from the UK, who studied the strange earthquake.
Three ingredients to make diamonds: carbon, heat, and pressure. You need a carbon source, heated up to break the bonds between the molecules, and the immense pressure to push them back together in a perfect crystalline structure. Essentially, this is what we saw in Africa. Through no natural means, at least not one that I can explain, the Earth in the DRC is rich in carbon sources, obviously, or there would not have been any diamonds there in the first place. Then the Earth must be heated up immensely, and the pressure, well, that would have been the crunch. I am not alone in this, but we believe that the single anomalous seismic event was the great pressure needed to solidify diamonds. Only it occurred here all at once. This is the same process that makes diamonds naturally, but it occurs hundreds of feet underground over the course of millennia. The entire middle of the DRC was sunk about 35 centimeters, or 14 inches after the crunch. While this does not sound like much, for an entire country to sink even an inch, let alone 14 all at once, is impossible. Roads cracked, foundations of buildings crumbled. If this had occurred in a more developed country with major cities like UK or America, the damage would have been catastrophic.
But catastrophe came to the DRC anyway. What happened to Marquise and his father was a sinister omen of what was to come. Marquise walked me through his small green and brown village of Damille towards his workplace. Marquise makes a good living now as a jewelry craftsman and tour guide.
Yes, the village is much happier now. The tourism brings money.
Hey, you. You're the reporter everyone's talking about. I've got something to say.
Hello. Who are you?
Name's I was there when this whole bloody business went down.
This man approached Marquise and me on our walk in the village. I've omitted his name to protect his identity. We'll call him Warren. And Warren had a lot to say about the Diamond War and its participants. He's an older man with messy silver hair and a sparse beard, wearing khaki clothes lined with deep sweat stains. He also has the sharp smell of scotch floating on him. Warren claims to have worked at the Carson mining facility. He ensured each diamond was fit for sale. I followed him back to a remote hut on the outskirts of the village. A small one-room hut with a bed, tables, and chairs, a small television, a minimal kitchen, and a bathroom out back.
Do you want to know why diamonds are so valuable? It's not because they're pretty, or the songs sung about them, or the blood spilled to find them. They're valuable because they're rare and hard to find. Entire mounds of dirt and rock are moved on the backs of slaves to find a handful to sell to the highest bidder. Now, the owners of those corporations funding the mines only saw dollar signs after the magic trick. Overflowing bank accounts, jewel-studded mansions, cars, women, yachts, untold and unprecedented wealth. Because that's what the situation was, unprecedented. The whole Gaia Prime business was unprecedented. Maybe in ancient times when magic was real, the world knew what to do with miracles. You want a glass?
No, but thank you.
Can't let a man drink alone, can you?
All right, just a bit.
Good stuff, right? My last bottle. Okay, all work and no play then. So what happens when the rarest of rocks becomes as common as gravel?
They're not as valuable.
Diamonds, in their faceted glory, became worthless. Worthless! No one imagined that, did they? There are now enough diamonds beneath the black skin of Africa for every man, woman, and child in the world to have diamond rings, necklaces, bracelets, hell, even a diamond-studded tooth if you want. Those men went from stupid wealth to just plain stupid, owning little more than very pretty gravel. The world lost its mind. The world market was threatening to burn to the ground. The stocks took a deep dive. I've never seen such a graph. An arrow that usually zigzagged steadily at a minimal margin just dips straight down and nearly crashes to the bottom, just like in the cartoons. You've seen that, Barry, in the cartoons?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
But of course, that came later. Before the world realized what a surplus of diamonds would do, the world came down with a craze, a fever, the diamond rush. People were willing to kill for one diamond before. What did they do for a whole country of them?
The bloodshed,
the unhesitating violence was unprecedented. The diamond business has always had its list of crimes and bloodshed, but the diamond rush, it crammed hundreds of years of suffering into the span of 6 weeks. And not just on the ground here among the workers and their masters, no, but globally. Shall we say the vague government powers bulldozed through the country trying to claim the mines, the lands, and the diamonds. It was war. It could have been World War III, but everyone was playing the political game.
After the initial confusion and riots at the mines across the country, the DRC's government moved in to stop the looting. The mines were shut down and guarded, but the raids continued. Military groups in the regions and from other surrounding countries migrated to try and take control. These were militias led by warlords that undermined the democratic government of the DRC. It is still vague how everything escalated. For example, the Sparkling Earth facility here in DeMille was owned by the Belgian government partnered with Germany. They sent their soldiers, which sparked their allies the UK and the US, more militant groups and warlords, and then the appearance of a terrorist group who identified themselves as the Swarm. China got involved because their supply of copper and cobalt was compromised, the Russians mobilized a group to protect their mineral mines in the northern half of the DRC, and so on, until every major power had some kind of military presence on the ground.
Everyone threw their flag into the mix. They only did it because they wanted the untold riches for themselves.
This is still Warren, who pours himself another drink.
It was easy to pass along the blame. It's the warlords, it's the villagers, or my favorite, it's those terrorists. The Swarm. All those reports and videos and pictures of terrorists all in black, strictly anonymous. How convenient. Could have been anyone. But I know who they were.
An army of some warlord that got creative?
Yeah, convenient. No, they're Americans.
Americans.
That's right.
Okay, so the U.S. government sent an army disguised as a terrorist group to fight themselves.
Tried and true methods. Paint some perfectly crafted face of evil on some unknown terror, build some fear, then say we need help and send in the troops to eliminate the threat. They did it in Vietnam, Iran, Iraq, Turkey, you know, pick a brown or yellow face, call them terrorists, call them communists, call them a threat.
Why would they do that?
The fear is the best motivator. No one will question their country's involvement while people are dying, while people feel threatened by some terror, no matter how far or vague. They'll feel safe if the government tells them they're the good guys.
But everyone was involved in the Diamond War. The terrorist group was real. The DRC asked for help.
Follow the money, Barry.
What?
DRC's got no money for an army. So America steps in, funds a war, wins, and when it's all over, the troops stay to help rebuild. All they ask for in return is a cut of the new surplus.
Well, that is some high-level paranoia.
I thought that was your bread and butter.
Look, I didn't come here for more conspiracy theories from some drunk who lost his job. I've got plenty of those already, so thank you for your time.
Hold on. I get it. It's a big pill to swallow. Give me 5 more minutes. You're gonna wanna hear this. Fits right into your show. Come on, finish your scotch. Don't you wanna see what's inside the box?
All right, 5 minutes. Then I'm gonna go look at some diamonds.
Try this one on for size. It would be really difficult to get soldiers from the same army to fight each other, right? Right, so who do you think they got to play the role of the terrorist called the Swarm?
Aliens.
That's funny. No, it was the same people who owned more than half of the mines in Africa. Under another name, of course. One company funded by this company, who's controlled by that company, on and on, but it's all the same pocket.
No, I just...
You know the name. You know I'm right. Who has the resources? Who has the most to lose here? But also the most to gain by taking out the competition.
The Diamond War escalated for 6 weeks. Each major power claiming to be fighting for the DRC, protecting them from the warlords and the terrorist group, the Swarm. Villages were pillaged, jungles burned, mine tunnels collapsed with explosives. There were many casualties on all sides. Let's step away from Warren for a moment to Oscar Sanchez, not his real name, a soldier in the U.S. Army who was in the middle of the conflict.
I was stationed in a village called Concordia, protecting the Gottlieb mine that's about 20 clicks west of Kinshasa. Kinshasa was a high traffic zone.
What were your duties while stationed there?
At first, I was mining the checkpoints, roads leading in and out of Kinshasa, making sure we know who's coming in and who's going out. Then I got moved to an AZZ.
An active combat zone, which in Oscar's case was the Gottlieb mine, owned and operated by a Polish firm with Russian and American ties. This mine was also affected by the miracle, just like all the others in the DRC region.
I was patrolling with my buddy, just loops around the perimeter of the mines. We had intel that the Swarm was moving in from the south, but it was real quiet that night. It was a weird assignment, man. Like, not as hot as Iran, more trees and animals and shit, but what were we there to secure, you know? Diamonds? The suits back home kept saying it was to protect the people of the DRC, but where were the people? The whole mine was cut off and the village was empty so that we could use it as a camp. So, what people?
Do you think the U.S. interest in the war was more about the diamonds?
Look, man, I'm just a grunt, all right? But yeah, in the sand pit, it was oil. In Africa, they got diamonds.
I mean, that seems a little cynical for a soldier to say.
Man, I served 3 tours. I've seen some shit. Can I be a little cynical?
No, of course. But I've never been in the army. I don't understand how someone can serve in the military if you don't believe or agree with the reasons to go to war.
Look, my daddy was in the army. His daddy was in the army. All my brothers, all my cousins. I do it for the whole thing. If we don't, someone else will. Then America will be second best and in danger. Better to be on top. That's what my granddaddy always said.
What about all the innocent villagers or the miners?
We're not killing them. Look, this dirt pit's been killing its own for years, man. If it's not the warlords, it's the government. If it's not the government, it's the guards and the mines. If it's not the guards, then it's the fucking lions. If I can help save just one, then it's worth it.
Oscar's camp was attacked in the early hours before sunrise by the group known as the Swarm.
They stormed the south perimeter. It was a weak point, I know that now. The bottom of a hill, and they had a vantage point. They dropped in on open-top jeeps, shooting ARs. We all scrambled back, trying to figure out what the hell was happening. Someone hit the alarm, and our whole place just lit up. There were about 25 to 30 bug eyes.
Bug eyes are what the military called members of the Swarm.
They're dressed in all dark black and gray and all covered up. You can't see their faces. They had these weird-ass-looking goggles, like big black glass, you know? They look like bug eyes. We drive them back a bit, then they pull back with some RPGs or some frags or something. We radio for backup and we retreat to the mines. Our tents were on fire, the Humvees all jacked to shit, and some of us are shot and wounded, you know? And a few dead, but more of them, though. And my buddy, he got these wicked burns on one side of his body, and I remember his hand, like, reaching out to me, and it was all black. Just charred to shit like some fucking marshmallow. And I drag him into one of the offices in the mining facility. I went back to secure the opening. We just needed to hold him off till backup got there. That's all we could do. When I got to the doors, one of them bug eyes was there. You know, they look like moving shadows in the dark, in the night. All black with these shiny glassy eyes. They're spooky, man. I didn't have time to raise my gun, so I swung at him and knocked him down to the ground. His mask and his goggles had slipped, and I just froze up. Look, man, I don't know what I was expecting, and I ain't no racist, man. Evil has no color, you get me?
Yeah, I understand. Go on.
That bug eye was white. Brown hair, light eyes, kind of soft looking. Now, I ain't saying there ain't no white people in Africa. I'm just saying he looked like he could be my cousin or something. The boy next door, you know what I'm saying?
Do you think he was not from Africa? Like European, American, Russian?
I don't know. They told us it was some warlord from some shithole desert, but none of them are white. You know, in combat, you just never expect the enemy to look like you.
And what happened next?
The son bitch shot me, right in the leg, above the knee. I shot right back, right between his eyebrows. Look, understand, I ain't proud of that. You just react. There is no time to really think about it. Then I dragged myself back inside, holed up with the rest, trying not to bleed out, and I had to wrap my belt around my thigh. Backup came, we heard them shooting a bit, then it was quiet. We opened the doors, they brought in the medics. But what bothered me, what still bothers me, is that when they opened the doors, that bug-eyed I shot right through the brain was gone. We didn't move him. He sure as shit didn't get up and run away. Where'd he go? Every time I get them phantom pains, I think about them.
Oscar has a faraway look on his face. His hand absentmindedly touches the skin above his prosthetic leg. Oscar's story of the disappearing body wasn't the only one. Reports across the Diamond War all had similar details. After any fight with the Swarm, after the shooting had stopped and soldiers would recover, there were no bodies left behind of the Swarm. There were some unconfirmed reports of a few found, but they were burned beyond recognition, leaving very little to identify. This, of course, fueled conspiracy theories, campfire tales of the supernatural. The Swarm, who claimed no allegiance to any country, no identifying details of where they came from or who they were, they communicated through cryptic, voice-modulated videos. The disappearing bodies added to their enigmatic persona. Some people thought they were demons, or aliens, or from an alternate universe, or even from the future. Some people thought they were Gaia Prime. Our friend Warren thinks differently.
They weren't ghosts, or demons, or Gaia Prime. They were people. People paid to terrorize.
So you think the U.S. government, or Hydel Corp, paid people to pretend to be a terrorist group?
That's right. Just tell them, hey, that's where all the diamonds are. Go get them.
To gain control of the DRC.
Yes, and making the U.S. of A look like heroes in the process. The DRC would owe them many favors.
Yeah, but that's not what happened.
Like I said, went from stupid rich to plain stupid.
6 weeks into the Diamond War, a discovery by the people of the DRC came into the limelight. The discovery came from a reporter, Hilary Ort, in a village outside of Kinshasa, where she watched villagers dig a latrine. They peered inside the 4-foot-deep hole and saw diamonds scattered about the bottom. there were more reports of the same across the country. It has been all but confirmed now that the entire central region of Africa encompassing the DRC has a layer of diamonds just a couple of feet beneath the surface, an unquantifiable amount. The war ended. Everyone looked away with embarrassment. No one was taking or giving blame. The swarm disappeared as mysteriously as they had arrived. Everyone declared the war was won. The good guys won. Over the next year, analysts struggled to make sense of one of the rarest commodities suddenly losing all value. Wall Street failed to calm the panic, the near riot of stocks plummeting, of money withdrawn from the diamond business. But most of the people of the DRC, like Marquise and his village, bounced back. Some of the mines closed, some are still occupied by warlords, but most of them went back to the people of the DRC. They operate them now, making diamonds profitable again, though not at the same value. Like Marquise. His jewelry store is inside a tourist outpost called the Damile Congo Safari Inn. Tourism has grown in the DRC after the miracle and the ceasefire. A new kind of peace has settled over the country. As we walk, I notice tiny sparkling stars on nearly every residence. Women with diamond-studded anklets and necklaces, men with large diamond-set rings, bracelets, watches, children and babies with diamond headbands or a single diamond stud in their ears, and even a baby rattle with a diamond-encrusted handle.
The tourists love to buy this jewelry. They all love something shiny. I think it's because they couldn't afford diamonds here before. But now that they can, they want to sparkle.
I'm thinking about buying some myself. I mean, you know, an economist claimed that the DRC is on a fast upward trajectory. It means that the economy is growing very fast here and becoming a real power in the world.
Yes, I believe that is true. With the money coming from the diamonds and tours and not going to some other pocket, my village will get new roads and hospitals and businesses. That is all we needed. Just a chance for the people to make this country, how do you say, bedazzled.
I've got something to show you.
Warren, the drunk from the streets of Damile, who claimed to have evidence to back up his claims, pulls out a small metal box and drops it on the table.
Here's a little taste.
He serves himself another drink, while I cautiously open the box. Inside are photographs from the Diamond War, of the village, of the inside of the mines, and of soldiers in combat.
These pictures are what we saw on the news and the internet.
Keep going.
I dig deeper. The pictures show soldiers of the swarm, dark-clad figures, no distinguishing features, those unsettling big glass eyes. These are the clearest pictures of the swarm I have ever seen, and the only ones of them not in combat. Then, a photograph of a large helicopter unloading the swarm soldiers. The cabin door is open. The next picture zooms into the cabin. There's another soldier inside, and a few crates. The next picture is zoomed in more on the crates. Inside are neat rows of assault rifles. The next photo zooms in more. It is grainy and a little blurry, but there's a logo on the box, faint and unfocused, but it's a logo I have seen many times before.
Where did you get these?
Told you I had something.
Who are you? Wait, I want to see the rest.
Come on, kid. I'm going to give them to you. I don't want them haunting me anymore.
Wait, hold on. Where was this taken? Do you know who this is? Look at it.
Don't know. But I can find out.
That photograph had a camp or a village in the background, soldiers shooting in the foreground, the arm of a soldier on one edge of the photo frame, and on the opposite side, blurred by fast movement, moving out of frame, was a woman, facing away from the camera, her hair floating in the wind as she turns, skin gleaming with sweat and maybe blood in the hot African sun. I can't see her face at all, but I think it's Elisa. Could it be her? Could she have been in the DRC randomly captured in this photo? I cannot give any more information on Warren at this time. Again, that is not his real name. He will be giving me the box of photos and other documents. I will sift through all of it and I will report my findings to you soon. We set out to find the truth, and now I think we're close. Thank you for listening to The Gaia Miracles. Join us on our next episode.
The swarm. The diamonds of Africa belong to us. Do not get in our way or suffer the many of the swarm. We are one, we are many. We are the swarm. We are one, we are many. We are the swarm. We are one, we are the many. We are the swarm.